You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Carl Dong, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Marty. It's fantastic to be back. Yeah, last time was back in New York in Williamsburg, right? That was a long time ago. I remember you brought some brews in and we had a little beer. It was great.
Talking about reproducible builds on Bitcoin and Geeks, a project that you worked on for quite some time. Thank you for that.
Of course. I mean, it was a pleasure. I mean, everything. I'm very lucky that everything I work on is like an obsession of mine, you know? So it really doesn't feel like hard work at all. It just feels like I am chasing this rabbit hole that I would have otherwise been chasing it anyway. So, yeah.
Well, you've been working on something else, which we're here to talk about today, Obscura.
Yeah.
VPN, which...
No, 100%. I mean, it's been a wild ride. I think we announced it around the end of last year. Well, I guess we're in 2025 now. So the end of 2023, and I've been working on it since then. It's sort of been an idea that's been ruminating at the back of my head. I don't know. Well, the audience probably doesn't know. You know, I lived when I was a kid back in London for a few years. And then I moved back to Shanghai with my parents. And that's sort of when the Great Firewall came up, all that, you know, blocking of Google and Wikipedia and YouTube and everything. So I've been using VPNs and like building it out and testing different protocols since I was a kid. So it's always been at the back of my head that like, okay, like these protocols probably need a refresh, like the tooling probably needs a refresh. And so that I guess that all culminated in that. I'm happy to sort of go into more of what Obscura is and everything else.
Yeah, because I think before you announced Obscura in late 2023, you had written a script or a library that made it very easy to top up Mulvad subscriptions with Lightning.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Was it Mulvad or IVPN? Yeah.
No, exactly. It was exactly Mulvad. I think this was back in 2020. This was one of my like, you know, pandemic weekend projects, I want to say. And it was really great because, you know, at the time, and this sort of speaks to how, you know, visionary Mulvad was and still is. You know, I had just not seen a VPN company that did what they did, which was do the anonymous user number thing, right? That was ingenious. Like, why do you really just need me to pay, right? I get that, right? Like, you know, you need to rent your servers and whatever. You just need to get me to pay. Why do you need my email address? Like, you know, just generate a random number. I'm an adult. I'm perfectly able to keep a random number somewhere safely, and then pay using Bitcoin or whatever. And then I have my VPN. Like that is like sort of the perfect flow. And it was one of those moments where I was like, okay, actually, VPNs are sort of one of the perfect things for you to pay with Bitcoin for, right? Because like that payment information is basically the only part of the personally identifying information that they have about you. So you want it to be somewhat pseudonymous, somewhat unstoppable, and things like that. And I was like, okay, they don't accept Lightning yet because, you know, integrating Lightning back then as a vendor was you know, still quite a pain. And so I was like, you know what? I just literally emailed. I don't know if it was their support or I directly emailed their CTO, but I got through to them, and the guy was like, let's email over PGP encrypted email. And then we got this deal done where I was able to like buy their vouchers and resell them for Lightning. And that was a great experience. It was just like a weekend Python script that I wrote. It was really fun.
Yeah. No, it was fun. And again, going back to privacy, like you're using VPN, why do you want to use it for privacy as you're perusing the internet and that payment historically, whether it was via credit card or debit card, is a leaky hole in the boat of privacy, which can get back to you. And so the sender privacy that is afforded on Lightning makes a lot of sense. It's like, okay, obviously receiving privacy is not ironclad or easy to get to ironclad, but sender, you have a lot of sender privacy on Lightning. So adding that, and was that hackathon, that weekend project, was that something that set off an idea like, okay, maybe I should go work on my own VPN and build Obscura?
I think it was. I mean, I've always been looking at it, and you're absolutely right about that dichotomy of like, you know, sender privacy and receiver privacy, and Lightning sender privacy is much more strong. And I also thought that with VPN services, these aren't like, I don't know, like $50 transactions, right? These are like, $10 at most, let's say, right? And so it made all the more sense to do it over Lightning rather than the base chain, because otherwise it'll just be eaten up by fees. I think what really prompted everything was when I went down a deep rabbit hole with looking at, right, I was at PubKey. I still remember this. I was at PubKey and I was chatting with Matt Carallo, and I was like exploring various ways to do different VPN protocols and everything back then. There's like this concept of a performance enhancing proxy, which makes it such that even though you're adding another hop, you can oftentimes even improve the performance of the overall connection by just sort of like terminating it in the middle, which helps with the TCP retransmission algorithm. But anyway, sorry, I can go down too many rabbit holes. You got to stop me sometimes. What Matt was saying was to look at how Apple did their iCloud Relay protocol. And I hadn't thought of it because I was like, okay, it's Apple, it's an iCloud Relay. It sounds very like brandy and markety. There's probably nothing there. But he was like, actually look into it. And I looked into it and I was just sort of blown away by how ingenious sort of the scheme was. I mean, a major part of the scheme is this concept of, you know, having two separate parties be your sort of VPN provider rather than one party, right? So, okay, maybe we should back up sort of a little bit in sort of how VPNs work a little bit, right? Like the biggest flaw right now that I see, right, in existing VPNs in terms of privacy and everything else, is that they act as your primary man in the middle. They see both your personal information, as in like your connecting IP, and you were talking about all the billing information and the credit card information and whatever, and your browsing history. Now, actually, you know, if you're technical, you're like, well, isn't my, you know, connection secured by TLS or HTTPS or anything like that? Yes, but there is metadata, let's say, that is in plain text. Very specifically, you should look at TLS's SNI extension. And this was introduced back in, I think the 90s. It was the 90s or the 00s, such that, let's say, one guy, let's say Cloudflare, can host websites for like hundreds of different websites and whatever, right? But what it really does is it just puts whatever website you're going to in plain text for for everybody to see, including like your ISP or your VPN provider or whatever. And I mean, like, you know, ISPs since the 2017 repeal of ISP privacy laws, they've been able to sell that data or like personally sensitive data to brokers without your permission, which is like, that's kind of crazy to me. But anyway, so I think that's sort of a problem in that they're the only man in the middle. And so users really have to trust when these providers say that, okay, your data is not logged. You know, we don't keep any, you know, we don't persist any of this information that you give us, right? But let's say a provider is actually trustworthy, right? They keep to their pinky promise. They can still suffer a security breach and be compromised and have that data be leaked, right? This is sort of why people who are privacy conscious, people who sort of understand how networking protocols work and how this data gets shuttled around, are actually starting to tell people like, hey, like stop using a VPN, right? And I saw that as a huge problem, let's say, for the industry. And also, you know, there are certain benefits to VPNs that we still want to keep, you know, without some of the others. So what Apple iCloud Relay did was actually quite neat. They simply said, okay, instead of having one person as your sort of man in the middle that sees who you are and sort of where you're going, let's have two people, two independent parties as hops, right? And so you, the first hop, you connect to your first hop who knows who you are because, you know, you're paying them and everything else, but they can't see any of your traffic. They just know your personal information and that you're connecting somewhere, right? Everything gets is still encrypted. And then you have the second independent hop that has no idea who you are. They just know that it's, you know, one of 1,000 users coming from the first hop. And they actually reach out to that internet and, you know, see your IP packets that are, but these IP packets are completely unattributable to you. So this basically splits who you are from what you're doing. And this was really simple yet effective and just solves the problem of privacy and, you know, being the only man in the middle in quite a beautiful way. It's sort of like Tor Lite almost, right? Tor has this option called Hidden Services Single Hop, and this is basically what it is.
What's up, freaks? This is Nat. You don't want to skip because Fold has a great offer for you. Everyone knows about Fold, the app where you can earn the most Bitcoin rewards for everyday purchases. I did this yesterday. Me and my wife, we use Amazon to buy quite a few things. And instead of just putting our credit card into Amazon and buying there, I put my credit card into Fold and buy an Amazon gift card and upload it to Amazon. Why? Because I get the credit card points and then I get sats back. Yesterday, I bought a gift card. I made 10,181 sats, about $10.50 in Bitcoin. And it's the only way to do it. If you want to stack Bitcoin passively, make sure you're using Fold gift cards. Fold has a special deal. I mentioned it earlier. If you're not shopping with Fold gift cards, you're leaving sats on the table. New users that sign up to Fold are going to get 20,000 sats in a welcome bonus with their first gift card purchase. So don't leave sats on the table. Sign up now at foldapp.com/Marty. Get those 20,000 sats, freaks. Sup, freaks. This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken the step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20. We had to do a little room switch at the Bitcoin Presidio. We have Wi-Fi problems sometimes here at the Commons in Austin as well. So I know Bitcoin On the bleeding edge of distributed.
The bleeding edge.
100%. But we can't figure out Wi-Fi.
I think this is totally not a sponsorship, but I have had good experience with Unify Gear, and that's all I've had good experiences with. All the other vendors are like, you know.
Unify Gear. But yeah. I think we lost you. You were explaining Apple's iCloud sort of relay system, and you're at the point where you were describing the fact that you hop between two independent actors,
right,
and that sort of masquerades the inception point of the data transmission.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, basically what you do is, you know, you're the user, your packets flow through the first hop and then to the second hop and to the internet, right? And so what that basically does is the first hop knows who you are, but doesn't know any of your traffic. And the second hop has no idea who you are and relays your traffic, right? So this splits that information between those two. And so nobody has sort of both pieces of the puzzle, let's say, to identify you or de-anonymize you or for the data to be leaked or anything else. And this is really, you know, simple yet effective, easily deployable. And, you know, sort of the simplicity of it all is why, you know, at the IETF, which is sort of the body that makes all the new internet standards, you know, like HTTP, DNS, all the good things that we know, they started a working group, which is sort of their, well, it's a working group. I guess it's self-explanatory what a working group is. It's a group that works on stuff. They formed a working group to standardize a version of this on top of HTTP3. So yeah, I got really into that idea and I looked into it. It's a really solid idea. And well, there's also another part of this idea that also came into play that got me really riled up as well. So like I was talking about how they standardized this on top of HTTP3, right? And at the beginning, I was like, okay, HTTP3. So the HTTP protocol has sort of been through several iterations. We had, you know, 0.9 was very popular. I think 1.1 was quite popular. And then 2.0 came about and was quite popular. And HTTP3 was somewhat new. And I was just thinking, okay, all right, they're just going to do it on top of HTTP3 because, you know, this is the new thing. And like, you know, everybody's trying to standardize around this new protocol and everything else. But actually that decision was also really ingenious. And I realized this from, you know, thinking back to the days, you know, when I was, you know, a teenager back in Shanghai trying to get around the Great Firewall, right? And so the Great Firewall blocked all of these sites like Wikipedia, Google, YouTube, all of these things that I needed to use. And, you know, I tried a lot of commercial options. They were, you know, not that reliable. I try to set up my own things with sort of off-the-shelf protocols that everybody knew, like OpenVPN, StrongSwan, and sort of later WireGuard. And they were like swiftly detected and blocked. Like it would work for a day and then tomorrow morning I'd wake up and like it's gone, basically. But what sort of sprung out of that was, you know, this is like a lot of developers who are just basically locked behind a wall now. And, you know, plenty of them are network protocol engineers. And so sprung up were like technologies. And these are just all just proper noun barrage. It's like V2 Ray, Meek, Shadow Sox, and more recently, Hysteria 2. I know naming is the hardest thing in one of the hardest things in software engineering, right? But beyond these names, let's say, they had like a common theme to them, right? And the common theme amongst all of these newer options that were, let's say, more reliable, let's say, to get around the Great Firewall, was this idea that's sort of part of the lingo of the internet freedom and everything else. this idea of collateral freedom, and more importantly, collateral freedom via obfuscation. So you have to sort of wrap your head around the game theory of like internet censorship and people who want to, you know, block things, right? Internet censors and sometimes overzealous network admins that we have here, right? Like, you know, Cisco has sold the same tech that they sold to the Chinese government to, let's say, to everybody, to you know, airports and hotels and whatever, right? It's sort of like, and network admins, I'm sorry to rag on network admins. Sometimes they're just like, they don't know. They're like, oh, we're under attack. Like, what is this Cisco advanced protection thing? Let's tick that box. Maybe that'll help. I don't know, right? You know, these network admins, they generally still want permitted traffic to go through, right? They don't want their employees not to be able to access, you know, whatever thing that they want to access. So they want permitted traffic to go through. So what is your play here? Your play here is that if on the wire, like at the protocol level, if you can blend in and look like regular internet traffic, right, by mimicking HTTP, then you're more likely to avoid being detected and blocked and sort of flow through, right? And so that was the, you know, one of the important insights in that and sort of why they use HTTP3 is that, you know, it allows you to blend in with regular internet traffic. And HTTP3, unlike HTTP2, doesn't suffer from, this is a sort of a technical term called TCP over TCP meltdown, whereby, you know, some VPNs you'll feel that they get stuttery, as in like, you know, if there's any packet loss, it recovers really slowly and it stutters and things sort of jump around. That TCP over TCP meltdown is basically what you're feeling there. And so that was also another part of it that I felt was really, really ingenious. I mean, to sort of take it a step back and think about, okay, what does this mean, let's say, for someone who is using a VPN like that, right? What it means is that in the places where normally, you know, your other VPNs won't work, let's say, at an airport, at a hotel, in certain nation states, or, you know, even on some campuses. I remember
when I was trying to use
at
YouTube TV.
Right, exactly. All like places, like if you're in a network environment that's restrictive, now it's way more likely that your VPN is going to work. It's way harder for them to detect and block your VPN connection because honestly, a lot of the time, unless you're in an authoritarian country or whatever, right? They're not actually trying to actively trying to block you. The network admins are just a little overzealous and just ticked something that they didn't really fully understand what they were doing anyway. So that's what's really happening a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's don't follow the interworkings and the iterations of the lower levels of the internet protocol, but it is very encouraging that a company like Apple will create this relay and then the people working on HTTP will recognize it and say, hey, maybe we should implement this to make it
100%
better to use. So the fact that the open internet still has somewhat of a cypherpunk sort of tilt at its core to enable the free distribution of data and information is highly encouraging.
No, 100%. I mean, it's because I feel like, you know, a lot of it is sort of unspoken, right? Like, because, you know, the IETF is supposed to be somewhat of a neutral, you know, organization and everything else, right? And you know, but these are nerds, you know. These are like people who are just like, we want freedom and we want, you know, these things to happen. And so when they see a good thing, they know where to take out. I was actually so like when I saw all of this, right, I was like, okay, all right, like let me like I'm someone who doesn't really understand anything until I've like coded it up. So I implemented one of the RFCs. So RFCs are like basically like BIPs in you know, internet land. And you know, I implemented it in Rust, and then I implemented it in Go just to like fully understand what was going on. And then I requested a waiver to go to IETF and was actually invited. And I went to the working group and met with the people there. They are so gracious with their stuff. And, you know, they told me crazy stuff of like, this guy, cause it's not just Apple, right? This is a working group with people from, you know, Apple, Cloudflare, Google, Fastly, you know, you name it. And anybody who's in networking, who's sort of higher up at the protocol design level were there. They're telling me their crazy battles with, you know, their technical term for it was like middle boxes, right? Which is basically like sort of your ISP and whatever, right? Like their crazy battles with middle boxes and how they, you know, introduce things in the protocol to just like make the middle boxes like a little confused and a little, you know, throw them off their game or whatever. And it was a good time. It was definitely a good time. And yeah, the IETF is a great, great organization for sure.
Yeah. This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines the tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC. Bringing it back to Obscura and how it compares to incumbent VPN providers. I think you mentioned it in the beginning, but that's one thing where it's Mulvad or IVPN, which are the providers that I've sort of trusted throughout the years. It is this pinky promise, as you said, and as you market on your website, that it's trust, don't verify, because you can't verify. You just have to trust that they're deleting the data, but because of the technical sort of functionalities that have been opened up with this relay system on HTTP/3, it seems like you can actually have more confidence that data isn't being logged, and Obscura
100%.
Doesn't have the ability to do it in the first
place. Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, you know, what's better than not logging, can't log, right? Like you don't have to trust our word for it. Like, you know, we have our source code on GitHub. So to bring it to highlight, like the, you know, I was just talking about the two advances, right? Like the two POP relay architecture, right? And sort of it being based on HTTP and quick and reliable transport and all of those. And obviously, you know, we've put our own spin on those two and how we implemented it. What my understanding was that these are the ingredients for a new generation of VPN services, right? And these VPN services are going to be different. These are VPN services that like don't rely on trust for privacy, as I was saying before, and are also hard to block and hard to detect while maintaining good performance, right? And actually, so with our two-party setup, as we were talking about, we need two independent parties, right? We operate the first hop, and we're actually very proud to partner with Mulvad, which we see as one of the most trustworthy VPN providers out there, to operate the second hop, right? And or what we call the exit hop. And so we are completely independent companies. We don't share keys with each other or whatever. And so your internet, you know, data is split between these two hops. And for obfuscation, for, you know, getting around these network filters and firewalls and all those things, we do exactly what I was saying, was, you know, we tunnel these packets over QUIC, or which is sort of the basis of HTTP3, which gives us the benefit of, you know, being hard to detect or block, as in it'll work in places where your VPN has failed to work before. And this, you know, as I was saying before, this came from years of my fights and duels with the with the Great Firewall, trying to get around it and understanding sort of like what is, because I think one of the interesting dynamics, I want to say, is that for cryptographers and people who work on networking protocols in sort of let's say the first world or places where, let's say, internet censorship is like not here and now, they like to make sure that the cryptography is right and make sure that, you know, everything is perfectly blind and everything else. And that's a really worthy goal. But in a practical sense, you know, sometimes for network filters, let's say like a network admin at whatever, right? They've got a very simple mindset. They're like, this traffic looks too random, or this traffic is too well protected, or doesn't look like HTTP. I'm just gonna stop it. Like, I don't care what your, you know, encryption or whatever. I'm just gonna like, boop, you're gone. So it's an interesting dynamic to explore, let's say. But yes, so, you know, to take it back, you know, our WireGuard packets are, you know, your WireGuard packets, you know, perhaps some of your listeners have heard about WireGuard and how it's mm-hmm. a great protocol. And it still remains one of the greatest protocols. And the WireGuard packets are end-to-end encrypted from the user to MOLVAT servers. So we, as the second hop, we never see any of your plain text information, not even the SNI metadata that I was talking about, right? And with sort of, you know, QUIC and HTTP3's unreliable transport, we made it really hard for, you know, network admins to block that first hop from the user to us, to Obscura. We made it really hard to block. And we've done it without sacrificing performance across the board. And you know, we take people's trust very seriously. You know that our last conversation was about me working on Bitcoin Core's build system and everything else, right? And so trust is always on my mind. We want to be trustworthy, but we also want to minimize the amount of trust that anybody has to place in us. And so our entire source code is on GitHub for people to see. And you know me, you know, we're working on reproducible builds, and we'll roll them out for people so people can verify. Yeah.
Now, it's very exciting because it seems, just having followed the project since you announced it and getting access to the website before you launch, look at how you guys are marketing it. I think kudos on the design, the name. Naming's hard. I think Obscura is an incredible name for a VPN product.
Hey, thank you.
I think the way in which you guys communicate how you're differentiated compared to other VPNs is very clear and understandable on the website. And I guess that's the question I have. Do you, obviously you're partnering with MOLVAB to be that exit hop. And
yeah.
Do you think this will quickly become a standard in the VPN world once it's launched?
I believe so. I think there's going to be, let's say, I think that this is what the next generation of VPN providers are going to look like. I think that there is a crisis of confidence almost in, you know, existing VPN providers. I don't think that is the case for providers like MOLVAD, who have like proven time and time again, let's say, that they are trustworthy, you know, removing subscription, all of those things. But I think for the rest of the industry, there's sort of a crisis of confidence, because, I mean, I think what's happened, right, is that, like, you know, you've got these companies, there's growing scrutiny. There was like recently a like a government document telling people not to use consumer VPNs. They've sort of flooded YouTube. If you're ever on YouTube, it's like, you know, they've flooded YouTube with all these ads and exaggerated claims and scare tactics to who, like, you know, to someone who's like someone who like knows the low level networking stuff. I'm like, that you're stretching it a little bit. Like, you're stretching it a little bit, what you're saying. And you know, even after users sign up, they have all these predatory pricing strategies where it's like really cheap the first year, and then they jack up the price for the next year, and you're just paying insane amounts. And you know, even behind the scenes, these companies are there's this interesting graph. I think it was Windscribe that made the graph. There's an interesting website that they put up of the VPN ownership map. And it turns out these VPNs are like, a lot of these companies are what I call like the many-headed hydras, let's say. These are basically a graph of VPN providers that are all owned by a parent company, like you know, Ziff Davis or Cape or one of these, and it's questionable ownership, right? And oftentimes, when they're part of sort of these conglomerates, you know, they use the other arms of their hydras to astroturf a little bit, right? Like, let's get on that top XVPN of 2025 list, or let's get on whatever. And I look at these lists, and all I'm looking for is like, is Molvat there? Like, if Molvat's like not on one of those lists or not on the radar of these lists, I'm like, come on. Like, this is just not a serious kind of a thing. So this is I'm sort of describing this crisis of confidence, right? But I think sort of the next generation of VPN services really has to address you know, the original sin, let's say, of VPN services and sort of this privacy and trust problem. And I really think this is what it's going to look like. And I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. I mean, bringing Don't Trust Verify to the VPN world is extremely exciting. And I think you're being a bit polite to the competitive landscape by not naming names, but like companies like ExpressVPN and others who are deploying millions of dollars of ads on very popular podcast with questionable security and particularly of data, of user data. And from what I understand, a lot of these companies, as you mentioned earlier, are selling data to third parties to juice their revenues. And I think it's important if you care about privacy and maybe not even care about it, but desperately need it, depending on where you are in the world and what you're doing, being able to verify that this isn't being logged, you're not being tracked, and you can't be tracked is very important.
100%. And I think it's, I have a few thoughts there. Let me make sure I touch on everyone. The, you know, I don't like to, name too many names, mostly because, I think that this should be an, maybe I'm too naive, but I think this should be an industry-wide sort of effort, right? I think that like there's a chance for this industry to be elevated, as in, okay, you guys aren't doing this today. You could be doing this tomorrow, right? Like, you could improve. We could make this industry a better place. And so I hope that, you know, these providers maybe come up with their own schemes, maybe to come up with, you know, innovations. You know, it's not a, you know, I win, you lose kind of situation. It's an industry that we can all improve upon. And I hope that we do. Right. Yeah.
Sorry for putting you on the spot there a little bit, but the, no, this is great. And obviously, I mean, as it pertains to the audience of this podcast, going back to what we discussed earlier, you have the ability to pay privately via Lightning as well.
Yeah.
Which is important.
Oh, 100%. That's super important to us. I think our stance, let's say, and not to dwell too much on the privacy part once more, but it's, you know, I think there's this good stance to take, which is that like users' personal data is toxic waste to us. Like we want our service to be as convenient as possible, right? But where possible, we don't want your data. We do not want to, you know, store anything or whatever. It is toxic waste to us. We wouldn't know what to do with it. And so when it comes to technologies like Lightning, where, you know, we really don't have to store anything other than, you know, a proof, we're very happy to implement that. You know, obviously, you know, I've worked on Bitcoin Core and big fan of Lightning and everything else. And actually, my wife, Val, works on LDK. And so she keeps me abreast of the, you know, the developments and everything else. And, it's been really great. I do want to point out that, you know, other than, the privacy aspects of Obscura, right? We really care about the usability of our product. And that's seen, let's say, in our macOS app, where we've tried to make every single user flow as smooth as possible. But also in that, you know, I was talking about before, this is a VPN that will work in places where other VPNs didn't, right? So even if you didn't care about the privacy piece, we've got your back and we have improvements.
Yeah. What do you think this does now that this product hits the market, not only for the VPN space, but for just freedom generally on the internet? You think this opens up new possibilities in terms of what people can work on and what they can get done without having to sacrifice privacy, speed, whatever it may be?
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, you know, everybody uses their VPN for different reasons. I'm not going to speculate on what. But I think a general sense that I keep hearing from, you know, the users who've been sort of beta testing our product is that, like, they turn it on, and because, you know, while we've optimized all of our protocols and everything works smoothly, they almost forget that it's there, but they feel safer. They feel that, you know, they are protected and that they could, you know, be free, let's say, and speak freely and browse freely, let's say, on the internet without worrying about if their, you know, ISP is looking at what they're doing, or, like, you know, their boss knows that they're on Reddit, you know, at 2 p.m. or something like that, or things like that, right? And I really believe that, you know, the internet is our digital commons. Right. I would venture to say our glorious digital commons. It deserves to be open and private. That is our mission at Obscura, right? To make the internet open and private by default. And I think in a larger sense, politicians are always going to try to erode our freedoms online, right? The American Constitution gave the American people great rights in sort of the physical landscape, because that was basically all there was back then, right? And with this new digital landscape, I think politicians are trying to erode our freedoms online. And we really have the duty as technologists to wield our skill and our you know, programming skills and whatever to defend our rights in this digital space. And so, you know, that's sort of part of the reason why I love working on stuff like, you know, Bitcoin and VPNs and everything else. I believe that it's a very important tool, for us. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is making me even more optimistic than I have been recently, because it does feel like privacy is winning. You've had, I'm not sure if you saw, I'm sure you did, this is your beat, but the, telecoms companies here in the U.S. got backdoored, and you had the government come out and say, hey, U.S. consumers, you should be using end-to-end encrypted apps. They essentially had to bend the knee and say, all right, like, this is not good. We don't want this backdoor or people getting hurt because of these backdoors that exist in these telecom companies. And we have the Open Secret team here in the Commons in Austin. They've been doing some really cool stuff with Neutrino enclaves to make sure that app developers have tools to make it so that they can better secure user data and prevent it from being prevent the possibility from it being stolen by hackers or nefarious state actors, yeah. whatever it may be. And it seems like, to your point, and your ultimate goal of making sure that people can browse quickly and privately on the internet and just make it the default, it seems like we're getting closer in 2025.
No, totally. And, you know, one more point that I'll make is that this is sort of at the edge of our understanding, I want to say, right? I think most products have been made with the assumption of, you know, at least the person providing the product would be able to see everything, right? And be able to do everything. And that allows that provider to be much more flexible, much more, it's easier to code, really. Like, it's easier to design and code and everything else, right? And so when companies are making products like this that are end-to-end encrypted, it is a challenge, but it is not an insurmountable challenge. It's a challenge that's really worth taking on. And I think that it's a cause worth championing, because I feel like because of the difficulty of the work, a lot of the time consumers have this dichotomy of, you know, oh, if it's private, it's probably going to be less easy to use. Or, you know, if it's easy to use, it's sort of not private. That dichotomy gets instilled in people's heads. But I don't think it has to be that way. I think that, you know, if we work hard, if we really think about how to design these systems, we can actually make products that are as usable as, let's say, the non-private alternatives and whatever, and have that end-to-end encryption, have, you know, preserve our glorious digital commons. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so help me better understand the composability of the protocol and the code base that you've written. Right now you're using Mulvad as one of the exit nodes. Do you envision a future where you'll have a suite of potential exit node partners that you could choose from as an end consumer, or just create diversity at the exit node level to give people?
I would really hope so. We made our protocol such that any provider that operates sort of a WireGuard based service, we can basically hook into. And so I, you know, we're obviously launching with Mulvad because, you know, we have a partnership with them, and they are also, you know, what we think of as the most trustworthy. I think many people think of them as the most trustworthy VPN provider. But we would hope that, you know, the industry opens up and people become other people's second hops and things like that, right? And I think an important point is that I think the VPN industry also needs to keep informed of the things that are going on at the IETF. I mean, all of these advancements, you know, came out of working groups there, and, you know, obviously at Obscura, we have our own little tweaks to make it just a little bit faster, a little bit smoother, and everything else. But you know, there are things coming down the line that I think are really really cool, like Privacy Pass. Privacy Pass is coming out of Cloudflare's research team, I believe. This is from a few weeks ago, a few years ago now. And they also have a working group. It's meant to solve the CAPTCHA problem, basically. So if you browse online right now, you have all these CAPTCHAs all over the place. And Cloudflare was basically like, okay, what if, you know, you can solve a CAPTCHA and store it in your browser as proof you know, for the next, I don't know, couple of days and don't have to see it for a couple of days, right? Like, why, like, you know, you just proved that you're a human here. Why doesn't this other thing know that you're a human? You just offer up the proof again, you know? And so there are a lot of interesting things coming down the line. I'm really excited for you know, our launch and what we've built and the future of the internet.
Yeah, if you could reduce the amount of times I have to identify the buses in a pictures, that would be incredible.
And the slow ones, the ones where they're like fading for like 5 seconds, you're like, dude, and then it fades in and it's like the same bus and you're like, oh, dude, I'm not doing this again.
That or the puzzle piece. Oh. They're getting like even more complex where it's like, all right, turn the shape and make sure it's pointing in the same direction as one. Like, oh,
that puzzle piece one gets me because I'm like a perfectionist. I'm like, I need to make sure. I don't think it actually cares, but I'm like, I need to make sure it's pixel perfect.
And for Obscura, how do you view the long-term vision of the company? Is a VPN just sort of the beachhead product that you plan on building a suite of products around, or is it VPN only for the foreseeable future?
Well, we're very focused on Obscura VPN, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of improvements, let's say, to be made to the existing functionality of VPNs and whatever. And of course, you know, we're launching on the 11th with, you know, $6 a month and everything, and, you know, on Mac OS. And so we're really focused on the user experience and the usability of our VPN. I think that the long-term vision, of course, our mission is to make the internet open and private by default. And what we want to do, in my eyes, is really get the VPN experience to be as smooth and as private as we can, be the best VPN that we can, and move up the stack. I think that there are, this was sort of out of the IETF. There are a bunch of sort of organizations that sort of manage standards in the internet protocols, but there's this sense that you know, the internet is layers, right? Is you know, we have layer one to layer five or layer seven or whatever. But VPNs provide you IP privacy, which is at the addressing layer. And you can go up these layers to the transport layer, to the application layer, right? So, you know, even though I'm talking through a VPN right now, right? Like, my name is right here, right? And so, you know, it you really have to go up the layers in order to offer better privacy. And I think we can do that, and we really want to be the company that is on the user side in terms of that. I want to make sure that our users understand that we're always going to make decisions that are for their privacy and for their betterment, and we'll work hard to earn their dollar.
Well, I'm very pumped that you particularly are working on this, because I think for anybody who's unaware of Carl's work in the Bitcoin space that's listening or watching this, you should go back and listen to the episode recorded, I believe, in 2019 about reproducible builds and geeks and how important that is to ensuring that you're actually downloading the code that you're supposed to be downloading, and that you can verify that when you're downloading Bitcoin. And that was very hard and sometimes thankless work, but extremely important. And if you're bringing that talent to the VPN world, I'm extremely bullish on Obscura and our ability to actually have a free, open, and private internet moving forward. So I'm pumped for you. I know you've been working on this for quite some time, and less than a week away from launch here. So I'm excited. I'm running Mac OS, so I'm going to download it as soon as I have access to it and take it for a spin.
Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Marty.
And thank you. And where can people go to download Obscura? We'll link to it in the show notes, obviously, but it's
Obscura.net.
Obscura.net.
That's how you spell it. Obscura.net.
Okay. Obscure.net. All right, we'll send people there. Carl, hopefully we can catch up. Hopefully it doesn't take 6 years for us to catch up between this episode and the next. We can do
for
it.
For sure, 100%. Always glad to be on. Really appreciate it, Marty.
All right. Thank you. Peace and love, freaks.